Hello, and thanks for joining the Walt Weekly Podcast Live. My name is Walter Latham Sr. I am your host, and I'm joined by Michelle Sweeney McComb, your co-host, right here from New York City. On today's show, the title is Save Our Children. Save Our Children. We have with us members of the legal profession that will be speaking to these issues in terms of what can we do and what is in process to stop this rise in school violence and shootings on the street. So with that said, I do want to mention that the two primary topics under Save Our Children is raise the age. That's a specific topic that we will be talking about. We will also be talking about the possible return of stop and frisk. And we're going to start out with the Rittenhouse verdict. And it was just broadcast not too long ago of not guilty. And today's guest will be providing an analysis of this case. All right, with that said, I want to turn it over to Michelle Sweeney McCombs to do our introductions, and we can get on with the show, folks. And thanks again. And let me just say one thing here is that on Sunday, there will be a release, as usual, to all the podcast platforms after 3 p.m. So wherever you get your podcasts, just do a search on the Walt Weekly Podcast, and you will find this episode. All right. So could you pass that on? And if you can't stay with us, well, we got some great things. Stay with us till the end of the show. We got some announcements to make. Okay. So with that said, let me turn it over to Michelle Sweeney McCombs. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you, Walter. And good evening, everyone. And welcome to the Walt Weekly Friday Live. Thank you to our live audience for joining us. Please follow the Walt Weekly and share this podcast by clicking the share button below. The Walt Weekly Friday Live is brought to you by Michelle Sweeney Hair and Skincare. Our intro and outro music is brought to you by Uncle Nephew. Today's guest, we have Mr. Walter Fields, along with his colleague, Ronald Fisher, attorneys at law out of the Bronx, New York, and also our panel members joining us, Gene Edwards, male district leader, 79th district out of the Bronx, New York, Christopher Sweeney out of New Jersey, retired sanitation worker and CEO of Johnny Roof Smokehouse. I'll turn it back over to you, Walter.
All right. Thank you, Michelle. I want to thank our guests. Awesome that you guys were able to join us. We appreciate it. I know your time is valuable, but let me just say, we're honored to have you here. Okay. Let's start out. And this is addressed to Attorney Fields with the Rittenhouse verdict, not guilty verdict. Can you speak, you're a lawyer, so we would like to have your thoughts and analysis on this if possible.
So first of all, I'd like to say thank you for having me and, other members of the Youth Defense Center come on the show. It was a fantastic thing to be a part of this tonight. So I'd like to say thank you very much for that.
Thank you. Thank you.
So in life, I always try to compare and contrast things. That's what I do. And that's the way I live my life. So Kyle Rittenhouse. So this is a young man who's charged with killing people, multiple people, and wounding people and carrying a firearm. So that's one thing. But I contrast that to what I see going on every day in the courts of New York City, and in particular, Manhattan and the Bronx. So we're primarily Black and brown people are the participants in the court system. And in those two places that I primarily practice, a Black and brown child that had been charged with such a heinous crime would, one, not have gotten bail. He would have been remanded. He would not have received the kind of treatment that the judge gave Kyle Rittenhouse. So we always got to ask ourselves, why are things not equal? Why are things not fair? Whether you agree or disagree with the verdict, that has no consequence to me. But what I am saying is that would not happen, or that would not have taken place for a Black or brown child. I have represented and represent numerous young men that are charged with far less than Kyle Rittenhouse, and they are generally remanded. The best and brightest prosecutors come after them with vim and vigor. And judges don't seem to value their freedom or their lives the way Kyle Rittenhouse's freedom and dignity were valued. We always got to ask ourselves why. So I know that was a question thrown at me, and I kind of didn't answer it. I threw it back. But I would like to say this. In our city, people are not valued the way Kyle Rittenhouse was. And in our city, a black and brown child would have not been treated that way. So why is that? And once we asked, and once we answer that question internally, then we have to fix that, because everyone should be treated. If he's going to be treated that way, then everyone should be treated that way. So that's how I think of the Kyle Rittenhouse situation.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I saw a few clips, you know, of it on and off during the trial. And I mean, it appeared to me that Rittenhouse was given every benefit, even to picking out the final 12 out of the 18 from the jury pool. I've never seen that before. Have you ever seen it? Is that something that's, is that legal?
That is not common. Again, you know, he was given, I think you used the best words. He was given every benefit of the doubt. And I think every child should be given every benefit of the doubt when they're in the adult system and facing punishment. But that's not what takes place for black and brown children. And we have to fix that. Because fair is fair, and a part of fairness is equal. And I don't believe that black and brown children in New York City and throughout most of the jurisdictions of this nation are receiving fair and equal treatment to their counterparts that are not black or brown.
All right. Now, if you're not speaking, go on mute. I'm going to address this to Chris. I see, Chris, you want to get in?
Well, I'm not surprised at the verdict. Let's say that first. I do want to address what he said, because it was a referendum on how we view our children and who values who. And that's why I'm upset with the verdict. Not more so if they followed the letter of the law, because we know that they gave this child every, because he was a child, right? And, you know, there's so many other things problematic about what happened, what took place that night. He was a child with a weapon that he shouldn't have had. He had a parent drop him off into that scene of chaos and confusion. And somebody lost their life. At the end of the day, somebody is not here with us anymore. And nobody's going to be held accountable for it. That's the first problem that I have with it. The second problem that I have with it is, he is valued in a way that our children are not valued. That's why I'm upset with the verdict, because I know no matter what we do, we're not going to see that kind of value, that kind of care, that kind of behavior from a judge. It'll be quite the opposite. So people should be angry. It's not about bearing, you know, the right to bear arms, because if that's the case, then why are we upset with all the shooting that's going on in New York City? All our kids should have the right to bear arms. There comes a time when there should be some responsibility on that right, and there is none. But it's only for our children there is responsibility and accountability, not for anybody else's kids. This show today is about how we save our community and our children from gun violence. But yet we don't have a problem with the Kyle Rittenhouse verdict. It's problematic, even from our perspective. Gene just said, hey, he had the right to bear arms.
So oh, he did.
Why shouldn't we have the right to bear arms in New York and shoot up the place and create terror for people walking the streets? What's the difference? If you don't have a problem with one, don't have a problem with the other.
Yeah, but then correct. Now you're getting into cultural differences, cultural.
I'm just saying
values.
We should have a problem with all gun violence, because that young man obviously wasn't. He shouldn't have had that weapon. That whole scene shouldn't have taken place.
I agree.
Somebody's child is no longer with us. We should have a problem with that.
I agree, but there was no, he wasn't breaking the law by walking down the street with a assault rifle. It was legal in that state.
Can you walk down the street in any state, Walt? I'm not going to say New York because we know we can't do it. Can you walk down those same streets with an assault rifle? Are you expecting the same treatment that that young man got? No.
You wouldn't have made it. I wouldn't have made it to the car. They wouldn't have been. I would have been dead on the street.
They never even looked at that young man. You see police officers passing him by in a chaotic situation. Even if he had the right to be there, if we want to say that, there was no more. That situation was a powder keg. Any law enforcement officer with any kind of decency or you know, somebody that's doing their job the right way would have stopped that young man and said, hey, what are you doing out here? We got this. We don't need you here. Nobody did that.
No, because to them, he was one of them. He's one of us, basically. He said, oh, I'm emergency services. I'm this, I'm that. He was questioned, you know, briefly from a distance. And he just said, yeah, I'm with the authorities. Something to that effect. Maybe not exactly that. But he identified himself as one of the boys. You know,
he went there looking for exactly what happened. He went there looking for it.
We know that. Found it. I agree with you, Chris, wholeheartedly.
And on top of that, the charge, the gun charge that they dismissed, that the judge dismissed, was probably the strongest charge that he could have got convicted of. And they dismissed, and he threw that out. So to me, it looked like the fix was in.
Yeah, it was in from the beginning. What you say, Gene?
Well, what I'm saying, when Chris said that Kyle went there, you know, looking for action, I just want to say that the three guys that he shot, well, the four people that he shot and the ones that he killed, they went there too, because they weren't true Black Lives Matter members. They didn't give a damn about Black people, and neither did they have a clean record nor any type of profiling courage. They went there for the smoke too, Chris. And guess what?
That's exactly what they got. They didn't give anybody the smoke. At the end of the day, so then these young men streets of Brooklyn and Queens are looking for the smoke, and there's people out there looking for the smoke too. Do we want to live in a society where we all looking for the smoke? Is that an answer?
No.
I don't know.
And to answer your question, Michelle, the first person he shot threw a Molotov cocktail at him. Okay? We all know what type of destruction that brings. And another one of the victims, and there's a picture of it. Kyle is on his back, and the guy's trying to hit him with a skateboard, all right, upside the head. And Kyle popped him before he got, you know, hit with the skateboard. So, like I said, these guys weren't there on a peaceful Gandhi, Dr. King type of mission. They were there to cause chaos and destruction, and they got exactly what they came for.
But I think we're losing sight of the forest. If I may jump in, I think we're losing sight of the forest for the trees. Every day in Bronx County, Manhattan, charged with crimes similar to Kyle Rittenhouse. The overwhelming majority of times, they get a bail that their family cannot make. A good portion of the time, they're given what's called remand status, which means until the case is over, whether that be a year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, they sit in some of the harshest county jails, and in New York City, it could be Rikers Island, Crossroads, or Horizon, where they can be victimized. They sit there waiting for their day in court. When they get their day in court, they're not given the benefit of doubt like Kyle Rittenhouse was given. So I understand that there was this incident and we want to concentrate on that, but we really have to focus on what took place after the incident. Because what took place after the incident is Kyle Rittenhouse was given a level of respect and decency and afforded bail when Black and brown children throughout this state and throughout most states are not given that same treatment. I just want to make sure that we get that in there, because that's what, to me, is the most important thing.
Oh, that was my first reaction. I mean, actually, it was my reaction throughout the trial from the little bit that I did see. The preferential treatment that the guy received just openly without any thought or disregard of what's going on across the country and how we would look at that. You know, it just, you know, the judge is throwing out MSNBC. What does MSNBC have to do with anything? I don't care. You know, so there were a lot of other different things that came across that if you're white, you're special. Just like it was said earlier, you know, you're one of us, you're special, so you get the preferential treatment. I used to think that, and I was going to pose this to you too, Attorney Fields, was it the level of the defense? I mean, he has good lawyers. He could afford, you know, to have the best of the best. Because that was the only way I saw him getting a not guilty verdict. So apparently it's not that, right? What do you think?
I watched a good portion of the trial, whatever I could see. His attorneys seemed to be competent and fine. But it was the entire system worked for him. It wasn't just his defense team. It was the judge. It was the presumption that he needed to be bailed out. It was that agency step forward to help him get bailed out. It was the whole presumption that this young man is valued and he should only be locked up. He should only be taken out of society if we can prove beyond a reasonable doubt that he did it. And we should go through everything we can to make sure his life is not ruined if we can't prove that. And that's not happening in Bronx County all of the time. And that's not happening in a lot of places, the vast majority of times, for young Black and brown men and women. And we have to fix that. That is the thing that we have to fix. Later on in the show, we're going to talk about some other things that impinge on that. But yes, that angers me. That's what angers me. It's not that he got off necessarily. It's not what the incident is. It's that we're not treated equal all of the time. I have kids who cannot afford clean sneakers. They don't have coats. And they're routinely having bail set at $500,000. Mothers who's on public assistance with kids getting bail set at $750,000 that don't have a passport, who's never left the state of New York, they're not flight risk. We're not valuing their lives. And that, to me, is the problem in our system today. And I think Kyle Rittenhouse highlighted that because that didn't happen to him.
Exactly.
That's what I was trying to point out. Before the trial even started, they had GoFundMe. They had all kinds of things set up to help this young man. He could have went in there with a terrible lawyer and probably come out with the same verdict because he went in valued from the beginning. That's the problem that I have with the verdict.
Right.
And if you're not going to do that for everybody else, then we got to listen, share it the way it is. It has to be the same across the board. So no, I'm not gonna celebrate his right to bear arms. No. His right is more than mine. And I'm a grown ass man who could probably handle that weapon. He was a young man that has more value than I do.
Yeah,
that's a problem.
That is a problem.
We know. Yeah, go ahead. Yes, who was that?
Ronald Fisher. Another thing is,
yeah, you're welcome, Ron.
When there's a jury trial, the jury is the trier of fact. The judge is the trier of law. The judge made determinations of fact saying that the people who died were not victims. The judge overstepped his bounds as where his role as a jurist is concerned. And that's troubling. He interjected himself, taking himself into the seat of the jury instead of allowing the jury to make the fact determination as to whether or not these people were victims.
That is troubling. Yeah, that's definitely.
Yeah. Can I also add in that he had that ringtone? There was no coincidence that ringtone, that Donald Trump ringtone, the judge had on his phone, that to me, I thought that was done on purpose. He was making a mockery of that case. To be honest with you, that's how I looked at it. He did everything in his power to thumb his nose at what was going on in society. That case wasn't just about Kenosha. It was about everything that's going on in the country right now. And they thumbed their nose at it.
Well, I would like to ask, and I heard this before the show started, was they asked the prosecutors, you know, what do they think about, you know, the outcome? And the prosecutor said, yeah, well, we, you know, it wasn't the way we wanted it to be, but we think it was fair because there were 12 men and women. The jury, every one of them voted not guilty. Every one. There was no dissension. So, you know, they apparently said it was fair. It was a fair trial. So what recourse? Normally, you know, the prosecutor said, well, you know, I think that, but then that you risk double jeopardy. I don't know, y'all guys, I'm asking the attorneys this. In a situation like this, where you get a not guilty verdict, do you have a recourse, or only the defense has a recourse to appeal?
I don't believe there's any statewide recourse in this case. I believe that this case is over. He was found not guilty. For all intents and purposes, forever and a day, he is not guilty at this point of this case.
So he can't be retried. It's dead. It's done.
It's over. Level. No, he cannot.
Not criminally. There's possibly civilly for his civil rights being violated. Perhaps the Justice Department, if they see something that they can attach to, they might. But as far as a criminal charge by the state, no, there's no remedy.
Okay. All right. What I would like to do is move on to this other issue that I want to discuss. And I wouldn't call it an issue. But as let me just check one thing here. District Darcelle Clarke's, and we're changing topics here, people. And we want to look at the raise the age law that we have, that District Attorney Darcelle Clarke of the Bronx has proposed changes to the raise the age law again. And I would like to know from the attorneys, what do they think about these changes? So this is specific to criminality, charges of criminal, you know, being a criminal 18 and over, you know, they're treated as adults. So below 18, then it's a family court matter. And our guests are family court, y'all guys work within the family court system. That's where your practice is primarily targeted. Am I wrong, or?
So our practice is split. We're in both adult and family court.
Okay.
We have wraparound services, and we represent young men in both criminal court and family court. So, to speak on what could change in the Raise the Age. Raise the Age was the biggest change in the law that's taken place in the state of New York over the last 75 years. And is it perfect? Probably not. It does need some tinkering, but not because we right now have a little uptick in crime. That's not when you do tinkering. So we are now showing respect more than we ever have for young people. And because there's been a little uptick in gun violence, an uptick in crime, there are certain people who want to tear it down. That's not what you do. And this is, you don't make a decision in haste. You don't make a decision based on emotion. You make a decision based on cold, hard facts, and you make a decision based on science and numbers. That's what you do. This law has not been in effect for 5 years yet. No, there's never been a law that is this encompassing, this sweeping, that has then gone back and been changed in this short a period of time. When applied right, this law does respect young people. When applied right, this law is helping rehabilitate young people. But no, there are certain people who want to take advantage of, quite frankly, public hysteria and just tear it down. And that's what's not right.
Okay. Gene?
Yeah. And you know what? Thank you for that, Walter Fields. And that brings me to my next question. I know that the media controls the feelings, emotions, and thoughts of most Americans, especially in New York. And I heard you say because of the recent uptick in shootings, it's caused a hysteria. I know that the media picks and chooses what stories they want to highlight based upon what cause they want to get behind. Because right now it's young black men shooting each other, and by January it'll be subway attacks, and then by, you know, March it'll be rapes in the parks and stuff like that with women jogging. So they pick and choose what they want to scare New Yorkers with. Do you think that the media is acting in concert with some of those elected officials and those in law enforcement that want to see the crime bill and the bail reform bill modified and changed or even restructured altogether? Do you feel like it's a concerted effort?
I don't have any information about that directly, but it's just a normal person who reads the newspapers. It does seem like there was a concerted effort to tear down the movement to reform our criminal justice system in the state of New York, and in particular in the city of New York. So does it seem like that? Yes, it does. It seems like they want to go back to the old way of doing business. Lock up black and brown people, chain them to the floor for 1,000 years, give them a criminal record, ruin their lives, and let's all move on. That's what it seems like. But bail reform, raise the age, and a host of other things have made a difference. Now, we have seen an uptick in crime, and people are concerned. And quite frankly, several newspaper outlets and several TV media outlets have taken advantage of that. We as citizens have got to seek out information. We have to seek out the science, as the Philadelphia district attorney always says. We have to seek out knowledge, because this is going to make our society as a whole better. This particular time, it's a tough time in this city because of COVID and because of other things. But we need not go back to the old way of doing business. We need not to go back to the old way of doing business that left a young man like Khalif Browder locked up for 2 years because his family couldn't afford a minuscule bail. That's not what we need to go back to. What we need to do is move forward. We need to add to bail reform. We need to add to raise the age so we can rehabilitate our young men and women and make sure that they're not a part of the system. They're not a part of the system. At this point, to incarcerate a young person for a year is almost $40,000. Is that what we should be doing as a society? I say no. I say that's ridiculous.
Okay. Well, it has been my thoughts, and I've been, you know, this is like upfront and close and personal to me, is that, you know, I got two grandkids that are in public school, and both 6 years old. And with the violence, and you know, I hear this constant drumbeat of, okay, kids that got a gun in school, the kids are shooting each other in front of the school. The first thing that comes into my mind is, you know, we got to do something about this. I don't care about all this other stuff about, you know, we got to reform this, we got to reform. I want my kids protected. I think school should be the safest place you can go. So I'm looking for, okay, how are you going to remediate that, or how are you going to fix this? You know? So I got that reaction as a parent, as a grandparent, that we got to do something. Now, I mean, the driving force, I think you mentioned, was that they're doing things in concert to make it look so bad out there that, you know, we really want to go back to, okay, everything is safe, but all the black people are locked up. You know, the majority of people, black and brown, are being locked up. And I don't want that. But I get to leaning towards, you know, this conservative viewpoint, which I used to consider conservative, is that whatever you got to do to stop the violence, that whatever you got to do to make it safe. You want this to be Kabul, Afghanistan, and you got to treat people that way. I don't give a damn as long as my kids are safe when they go to school. All right. So if anybody else has some comments along those lines, please.
But Walt, I challenge you on that. And I do that because, one, it's a lazy way of thinking. Do we want to bring back policies that did not work and exasperate what's going on? We have to also look at what's happening in its whole context. We're coming off COVID. We're coming off the George Floyd verdict. What happened with him? We're coming off police reform where they want to quote unquote, you know, defund the police, even though we know that's not what it means. All of those things take, you know, have a role, have a seat at the table with this violence, with the things that are going on. We have to look at, are the police doing everything they need to do? Are they pulling back? You know, these police unions, the fire union, and all these other unions, they're at war with the city because of the COVID mandates. A lot of people are not doing everything that they possibly can to do what's necessary to stave off this violence. It's not just, you know, listen, I grew up in the 80s in the crack era. It was violent. This is not new stuff. But bad decisions and poor policies should not be brought back to fix this problem. That's lazy thinking. We have to think outside the box, and we have to move forward and give new and inventive things time to work. The violence has always been here. It's not new. You know, right, that's my opinion.
Yeah, of course, of course. I, you know, and it's value. You know that. Right. But what I'm saying is, you know, I get to the point sometimes. To me, the worst thing in the world is to have, for any person to have a record, to be in the system. I think we should do everything in our power to prevent our kids from getting into the system, into the criminal justice system, to have a record, to be on probation, because that's going to follow them for the rest of their lives. That's going to impact them, the next generation after them, their kids. It's catastrophic to get in the system. You can't even get a damn good job. All right, now that you get it, you know, retracted or wipe your record wipe clean, and that costs a lot of time and money. So, yeah, my first reaction, Chris, was that. But I never, you know, kept those thoughts were reactive, you know, like I got pissed off, excuse the expression. So getting pissed off the way I was, that's the first reaction. Whatever you got to do. I don't care. As long as my kids are protected, which is a selfish thing. All right? But my position has always been and always will be, what can we do for our young folks to make sure they grow up, they have the opportunities, they become contributing members of society, and they make the changes necessary for our people. All right, they're in that position. So I just wanted to correct the record on that. That was reactive. And we will get to, and I want to go back to the lawyers. We will get to the next issue. I think we're crossing lines on this issue anyway. This is a good segue, is the possibility of stop and frisk being coming back. All right, with Mayor-elect Eric Adams. All right. So let's talk about stop and frisk as a remedy.
Right. Right. The Black Lives Matter movement is already threatening him. If they do bring it back, they'll burn the city down. So let's talk about that.
Right. To address stop and frisk again, and I hate, this is a constant drumbeat for me tonight, and I don't want to turn it into this, but if this was something that was being done to people that were not black or brown, this would have stopped a long time ago. Now, let's just paint a picture how horrible this is. You leave your house, you're going about your daily business, two armed police officers stop you and put their hands on you. Sometimes opening up your pants, sometimes putting their hands in your coat pockets, in your pant pocket, feeling intimate parts of your body. Is that what America's about? Is that what America's about? During the initial phase of stop and frisk, science was used. There was court cases about it. And it was determined that stop and frisk was not even effective. So why would we bring back something that statistically and scientifically has been proven is not effective? Why would we do that?
Exactly.
And I'd also point out, if you think stop and frisk really stopped, it didn't. They're just giving it a different name, but our young people report to us when they get arrested that they were stopped and frisked. It hasn't gone away. It's a little different, but it's basically the same thing still happening.
It's true, because Staten Island, I see it a lot. It hasn't stopped.
And then frisked. They just call it something else.
I mean, just imagine you living in a community and your kid is scared to go outside because he doesn't want to have negative contact. And whenever someone throws you against the wall and touches you, that's not positive. We can paint that however we want. That's not positive. And that shouldn't be happening in a civilized society. That shouldn't be happening to our young men and women. That shouldn't be happening to our people. So I hope Mayor-elect Adams rethinks that position. I mean, I don't know him, but he seems like a decent man. But I hope he rethinks that position, because I don't think that's in keeping with New York City or America. We fought long and hard to get that policy changed, and there's science behind why we changed it. It wasn't effective. It didn't bring down crime. It humiliated tens of thousands of young people, and it humiliated tens of thousands of men, generally poor black and brown men, in the city of New York.
I do have some stats that I pulled from the NYPD, their annual reports on stop and frisk, when it was officially in effect. All right, going back to 2019, there were 13,459 stops were recorded. 8,867 were innocent people out of that 13,000. 7,981 were black, which were represented 59%. And 29% was Latino. And only 1,215 were white, or 9%. 2018, it's like a mirror. Same type of stat. Okay. So primarily the minorities were the ones being stopped. But Eric Adams did fight against stop and frisk prior to becoming mayor, you know, prior to getting in the race. I believe he got in some trouble about it because it was abused. So what Eric Adams is saying, if it's used properly and executed properly, then you may be able to affect crime that way.
Well, we already know it's not going to be used properly. And how do you regulate that?
Well, that's
and
the thing.
How is bringing back a policy that you want to paint it as a new policy with the same people that implemented the old policy?
Right.
It doesn't make sense. And it's lazy thinking. It is lazy. It didn't work. Why are we reapproaching it? Why are you trying to shine up an old shoe with no bottom to it?
Come up with
buy
something
a new pair of shoes. Yes. Right. Come up with something. That's why we elected you, to come up with something new, to think outside the box. If I wanted the old, same, Bloomberg would still be here. What are we doing? It didn't work.
Exactly. Come up with some new policies.
I know we want to move on. I just can't stress how much I think stop and frisk is just absolutely horrible. So, I mean, I could go on for 4 hours about, and I have stories and anecdotal stories, and it's just not something we should be doing. It's just horrible. And since statistics say it basically does not work, why would we go back? The gentleman who said it's lazy thinking, it's beyond lazy thinking. It's mean-spirited and lazy thinking. And so we shouldn't be doing that. So I hope we don't return to that. I really pray we don't return to that.
Okay. Yeah, Gene?
Yeah, you know what? There's a duality in me when it comes to stop, question, and frisk. Working in law enforcement and being a district leader and being a black man, so it's more than a duality. Yeah, I guess there's triality, if that's a word. I've never really been the victim of stop, question, and frisk ever since I've been an adult male. It was mostly, you know, as a teenager in the 80s during the crack epidemic, you know, if you wore a nice coat, then, you know, the undercovers just assumed that you were a drug dealer and you didn't save up your checks from McDonald's, which I did. That's why I was able to buy nice stuff. But as a district leader, when there are shootings in my district and I hear about it and I have to go to the homes of these parents and comfort them, you know, they cry, their eyes are filled with tears, and they're saying, what are you going to do? Like, how do we stop this? And then I'm at a loss for words. And I see how some of the youth that are bad actors, Walter Fields, the ones that are bad actors, take advantage of, you know, stop, question, and frisk ending and bail reform and the crime bill and things of that nature. So it's like I'm on a fence, you know, sitting there like Humpty Dumpty, you know, about to totter, because I just don't know. I don't know whether to err on the side of attorney Walter Fields and you know, brother Christopher Sweeney, that stop, question, and frisk is an evil thing, or whether we should bring it back, like, you know, Mayor-elect Eric Adams says, but modify it, because I'm tired of going to funerals. I'm tired of hugging mothers with tears because their son was shot and killed in the streets of the South Bronx, and I don't have no goddamn answers.
District Leader Edwards, can I jump in there for 1 second? Can I say one thing?
Go ahead. Go ahead, brother. I want to hear from you, please.
So let me tell you something. We could always stop crime in this country. We could put troops in the street. We could fly over helicopters. We could have armed men in every bodega, every school. It's the cost. It's the cost of freedom. So there's things that we don't do because we're a civilized society. Anybody that has control of an army the size of the United States, if they really wanted to, can do whatever they wanted to stop crime. But we would not be free anymore. We would not have our liberty. Having armed police officers at will stopping young men and touching them is not liberty. It's not in keeping with our Constitution, and it's not in keeping with us being free citizens. No one wants to go to funerals, and we could stop that easily, but we would give up our freedom, and that's more important. So we have to be careful that the cure is not worse than a disease. Stop and frisk is, I don't even know if it's a cure, but let's for a minute assume it may be. It's worse than a disease, and we should not go back to it. And I'm just going to hearken on what the gentleman said. It's not. We could think better. We can come up with better solutions than that, because we could always do something outlandish and stop crime, but we just wouldn't be free anymore. So I understand that you're tired, but we got to come up with a better solution.
Okay. Attorney Fields, where are those?
Wait. Hold on.
We can't leave that there.
Hold on. This is for Attorney Walter Fields. You and I both work, like you said, the Bronx Courthouse, Manhattan Courthouse, me primarily at the Bronx Courthouse, and we both have a firm understanding of American jurisprudence, okay? So stop, question, and frisk in New York City was predicated off of Terry v. Ohio. So this is my thing when I talk about modifying stop, question, and frisk. If we stick to the rules of Terry v. Ohio, do you think that that would be an antidote?
Terry versus Ohio was a landmark decision. You're right, Mr. Edwards. But let me tell you, police officers on the street, they don't know what Terry v. Ohio is. It's a fanciful notion. And police officers on the street are going to be abusing that left and right. I don't care what policy you put in place. And Terry v. Ohio is something that's supposed to be articulable. Like, you're supposed to be able to say, I, as a trained police officer, know and can articulate why I believe that someone has a weapon on them, and for my safety, I'm going to search them. That's not what was happening under stop and frisk. Stop and frisk was, I'm in Eden Wall Housing Project, and those four kids over there are standing there, so I'm going to go over there, chat them up, and at some point, I'm going to search three of the four. That's horrible. We can do better than that. We can do better than that. That's not what we should be doing. And to that end, I want to examine the victim of stop and frisk. How does those young men feel? Do they feel like the police work for them? Do they feel like their public, that they was just, that the public served them? or do they become bitter and anti-society because they were just groped by police officers? They was touched inappropriately by police officers. You have a whole generation of young people in the city of New York who do not trust cops, primarily because of stop and frisk. You have hundreds of bad arrests that took place because of stop and frisk. And more importantly, and I keep harking on this, you have statistics that say it did not help. They were presented in federal court. They were unrebutted that say stop and frisk did not help. Why would we do it again?
I agree with that. Chris, I want to say this. Chris, can you hear me?
Yeah.
We have a nephew, my nephew David. He relocated to Florida. But every day, every morning during his high school years, the same police officers stopped him, asked him for his ID on a regular basis. It got so bad that my nephew dropped out of high school.
Yep.
That's what stopping for does to us.
I also want to add, Gene, I know when you go and speak to the loved ones of people who have lost children to violence and family members to violence, but what about the gentleman that's starting his day, going to work, and he gets stopped and frisked, and it just ruins his whole day, his whole approach, because here he is, a hardworking human being trying to be a decent person in society. And every day that you walk out of your house, you got to wonder if today is the day that they're going to harass you, they're going to frisk you. I was standing in front of a barber. It's happened to me several times. I'm standing in front of a barbershop and two plainclothes officers walk up to me. Don't say a word. Just start going into my pocket. And I slapped his hand. I said, what the hell are you doing? Don't touch me. Who are you? Don't even address who they are. Don't, you know, put a badge out, nothing. Do you know what that does to the psyche of people every single day when you're supposed to be out there protecting and serving, and you're just making it worse. That's why we got so many people depressed and angry and filled with rage all the time, because they are being harassed on a constant basis. That doesn't help the community either. So when you got to go and speak to these people, I sympathize with you, but because you have to make hard decisions and have hard conversations doesn't mean we go back to a lazy policy that did not work.
Yeah,
we put you in office to do better, come up with a better plan.
But Chris, I do have to parallel what you're saying with driving while black. You can say the same thing. You know, am I not going to drive? They stopped me 2 times already. Am I not going to drive? They stopped me 20 times. Am I going to stop driving?
But yes, Walter,
driving while black is the same thing, because they make you get down on your knees. It's the same thing.
And look what it does to us. Look what it does to us physically and mentally. But it destroys you.
If you allow it to destroy you, if you identify the root cause.
Come on, Walker. You got to do better. Listen, if you get elected to office, you're put there by the people to come up with ideas.
Let me just say this. Okay.
Because you
are not a proponent. I am not a proponent of stop and frisk. But there have got to be solutions out there. If you put a plan and you execute to a plan and you see where that plan is not working, you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. All right.
But you
look for ways to modify it so that it will work effectively. And that's what has not been done.
It didn't work. You guys are acting as if this thing had value. It did not have value. It didn't work.
Let me tell you something. Why are we focused on the little guy in this picture? The little guy who has a gun. We focused, same thing with the drug, when the drug craze was going on, we go after the little dealer in the corner. It's proliferation of guns in our society. Where are the guns coming from? Why aren't we addressing that?
Well, you can say the same thing, Attorney Fields, about drugs. Why aren't we going to the source? Because money is being made. They may follow the money.
That was Attorney Fisher, but let me just jump in.
I'm sorry about that. Yes.
Well, that's fine. But, you know, again, the gentleman that was just speaking seconds ago, he was 100% right. We're having this conversation, and they're having this conversation in the halls of power, but the policy stop and frisk did not work. Stop and frisk did not work. It was created by someone who may very well have been a racist under a racist regime of New York City, and the policy did not work. It would be different. This might be, we would have more value in discussing it if the statistics said that this was wildly successful, but it wasn't. The statistics presented in federal court, the statistic that you brought up yourself, sir, it points out that it didn't work. So why keep doing something that doesn't work and is harmful to people?
Okay. That's a point. That's a good point. That's a good point. But I do have to say that we all realize what type of society we're in and the powers that be, where their heads are. So how do we change that? I mean, we're talking as if, you know, as if, okay, everything is going to be all right. We don't want this. We don't want that. But in terms of policy and being able to correct the situation or do something about it, what should we do? And I'm addressing this to the attorneys first.
So I think it's like the lifeboat situation. We can't save every situation, but we have to get as many people in the boat that we can, because every time you get someone in the boat, we save a life. I think we have to push for more community centers. I think we have to push for more after school and weekend programs. I think we have to push to keep schools open. I think we have to expand sporting programs. I think we have to expand mentoring programs. I think we have to expand Stop the Violence program and Stop the Harm program. I think that's a start. I do think that's a start. And
okay.
And even, sorry, this, I know I'm talking too much, but I'm going
to. No, you're not. You're not. Go ahead.
And even with police officers, we have to go back to the real notion of community policing. One cop, one child. Police officers should be out there meeting kids. There should be ride-alongs. There should be a station house visits. So police should not be the enemy of every child in every neighborhood, in every housing project, in every hood. That's not what we should be doing. Bringing back stop and frisk ends that right away, because you're not going to ever tell me you're here for me if while I was walking with my date or I was coming and going to school, you threw me up against the wall and searched me. So building community police trust is gone. When the mother looks out the window and sees her 17-year-old son being searched, she doesn't give a damn about the police anymore. She views them as a conquering army, not something to be valued. So there's a whole bunch of things we can do, and there's a whole bunch of thinking we can do. The gentleman keeps using the word lazy thinking. That's manna from heaven. We can't fall into lazy thinking. We can't be lazy. And when cops are allowed to take a lazy way out, that becomes a part of the norm. I don't have to do real investigation. I don't have to talk to members of the community. I don't have to get people in the community who tell me information. I can just run up on every young person that I want, throw him up against the wall and search him, and then create the story after I may find something on the 13,000 kid I've searched. So let's not think lazy. I'm going to take what the gentleman said. Let's come up with real solutions. You know, there's a lot of nonprofits that have sprung up, including mine, but that are focused on stopping the violence, getting guns off the street, gang reduction. Let's fund those. Let's go head first into that and fix our city. But let's not lose our freedom while we're doing it.
And if I can add to that, this isn't just about law enforcement. This has to be systemic. The schools have to be teaching courses that kids want to learn from. They have to. When I went to school in the city, gym class was every day. I didn't have all this pent up energy that these kids have. They have gym one day a week. Why is that? There's no music class. There's no art class. There's no choir class. There's all these things that kids who don't want to be doctors, lawyers, scientists who don't have any type of access to. We have to give them options, how to be carpenters, how to be, if they want to be in fields of construction. All these things that were available to kids when we were kids are not available to our children now. So what are they left to? They know they're not going to be a doctor. They're not going to be a lawyer. Okay, what am I going to do? I'm trying to be a rapper. I'm going to be a basketball player. Or I'm going to be a hood. Those are the options left to them. Well, and then we want to put them the way they are.
Right, but I want to know why they don't.
No, gentlemen and the lady, I have to respectfully disagree with Attorney Fields and his partner. These initiatives, Walter Fields, that you've made mention of, they are already in place. These are not novel ideas. They're already in place. The problem is only the good kids that want better for themselves attend. There are some kids out here that are hell-bent on being gangbangers and just being overall bad actors. So we have to understand that reality, okay? Number two, when they get sick and tired of a life of crime and poverty and running from the cops and all that nonsense, they will do better for themselves. I work with an organization called Guns Down Life Up. And back in September, we had an informational in the auditorium at Lincoln Hospital. And the informational was about green construction jobs. So you had to come to the informational, learn about it, then sign up. And then they would send you to school, pay you to go to school, and they did job placement. Walter Fields, let me tell you what made me cry. When I walked into that auditorium and it was packed, and that auditorium seats 300, it was packed. And I looked around and I saw the brothers that had do-rags on, and I recognized them as corner boys. And I said, yeah, you tired of working that corner, and now you're ready to do better for yourself. You're tired of running from the cops. You're tired of looking out for the stick-up kids. You're tired of all that gang violence. You're ready to do better for yourself, and now you're here. That and only that moment is when these young people will join these initiatives that you spoke of, like I said, that are already in place, and join the good kids. Until they get tired of the bullshit, they're going to still keep running around doing bullshit. And with that, I'll digress.
What Mr. Edwards said is 100% right. None of what I said is new. It's not new. But for every $10 we give to locking a kid up, we give 10 cents to the programs that we just talked about. So there could be a heck of a lot more of them, and there could be a heck of a lot more outreach. Just the people in this show right now, all of the people in this show are fantastic orators. They're fantastic men and women. And there's lots of people just like the people that are speaking here today. And we've got to reach out to them so they can reach out to our young people. So again, I'm not using the word defund anyone. I don't believe that that was a good phrase. But for every $10, which is a fact, that we spend on sending a young man to prison for almost ever, if that's such a phrase, we give 10 cents to the programs that I talked about and that Mr. Edwards talked about. Let's do better. Let's do better. Let's give 50 cents and see what that does. How about that? Let's start off small. I'm not even talking about equal. Let's start off with 50 cents instead of 10. Let's inundate our communities with these programs that are designed to help. Let's have 1,000, Mr. Edwards, if we can find such people. Reach out to them. So that's where I'm going.
Thank you. It's been a lively discussion, guys. I really appreciate it. Points are well taken. What I'd like to do is just talk about what the attorneys have, and what are y'all guys? What do you have that you're working on, that you're seeing? You know, what are some of the highlights that y'all guys see now on your side, being attorneys?
So we specialize in the Raise the Age initiative. We are, again, we're in adult court. We're also in family court. We represent young men and women for free. We are assigned certain cases in both the youth part and in all major parts of the adult court. And we also deal with juvenile delinquency cases in family court. We try to provide wraparound services. And to that end, we try to also be mentors to our clients. So it's not just whether we win or lose a case, it's whether we can impart something on the young men when they walk out the door. Give them knowledge so, one, they know not to get back into trouble, but two, how do they deal with authority when they're approached? How to navigate through a situation? So we're proud of the work we do. I'm happy that we're allowed to do this work. And I'm happy that I've come across agencies like Mr. Edwards was just talking about. Guns Down Life Up is a fantastic organization. And as many times as I can, I tell my kids about it, the kids that we represent. So I'm really happy that we're able to help our community in any way we can.
Excellent. And we have your website information, your social media, all that type of information we have, right?
Yes, I've been putting it in the chat room, and you guys could also shout out any social media pages you would like to give to our audience, provide to them on your website as well.
So we're on all of the social media platforms. Our website is ydcny.org.
Okay.
And we can be on Facebook. It's Youth Defense Center. So, and if anyone needs to contact us, if anyone needs representation, our phone number is 888-932-6933.
Okay. All right. And, we'll put that information in the show notes when we do the rebroadcast on Sunday. I just want to let you know that, Attorney Fields.
Yes.
Okay. Then we'll push that information out. Yeah, Gene, go ahead.
This is for Walter Latham, Michelle Sweeney, Christopher Sweeney, and all of the listening audience. I've been working in the Bronx Courthouse Hall of Justice and Criminal Court for a little over 10 years. And I've seen many black attorneys walk into that courtroom, whether they were public defenders or whether they were private attorneys. Almost always, I'm talking about the black attorneys, would approach the well. That's, the area where the judge and the attorneys and the prosecutors hold their business. Almost always, they were in a subservient position. And I always took inventory of the black men and the black women that stepped into the well with confidence, and they were ready for war. Like they were like quasi Alton Maddoxes of the world. And I want to go on record to say that Walter Fields, attorney at law, is fearless, and he's very competent and zealous. And, yes, I'm glad to have you on the show, but I'm just talking about you being the man that you are and the advocate that you are for the black community. I salute you, sir, for being the brilliant mind in American jurisprudence that you are. And with that, I'll digress.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, thank you.
Yes, thank you, Gene. So we're going to, before I turn it over to Michelle, are there any words that you guys would like to leave for our listeners? I'm going to start with Gene, and we're going to do a wrap on the topics that we discussed. And so, Gene, you have any words for us?
No, I don't have anything else to say because, anything If I give him more praise, I might as well take him to, you know, Peter Luger's and tell him to order everything on the right side of the menu. Come on.
Well, I look at it. I look at it and we got to charge him. We got to charge him advertising.
I already give him enough praise. And this is for, hey, and you know what?
Too much.
This is a big deal because everybody that knows me knows that I don't like most people. Okay, so the fact that I gave him a hero salute, that's enough. But no, seriously, Walter Fields and your partner, you know, we've met and chopped it up before at your office. And thank you for doing the show. Thank you for doing it at the last minute. And please continue your advocacy. And whenever you have something new, feel free to reach out to me and we'll get you back on the show, brothers. All right.
Excellent. Thank you. All right. Thank you. Thank you, Chris.
By the way, Gene, I'm not a small guy. I could always use this.
Yeah, Chris.
A couple of checks for that one.
Yeah. Chris. Yeah.
Hey, Attorney Fields and Fisher, thank you both for coming on. I just want to say last week, not even last week. Earlier this week, I was in Queens over off the conduit by some homeless shelters, men's shelter, women and children's shelter. And me and a couple of friends that cater as well. You know, I do catering, I cook. We all made some dishes. We set up some tables on the sidewalk and we served people food. And the blessing, the feeling that I got from those folks, I can never forget it. People cried. They hugged us. They thanked us. They wanted to know what church we were from. And I said, we're not from a church. We just brothers just like you guys just had an opportunity. So and we wanted them. We didn't want them to feel like they were forgotten or left alone. And those are the things that we need to do to help turn society, not just walk up and down and police people and go through their pockets. We got to show people that we care about them and we're not afraid to go and meet them where they are. So I want to put that out there and challenge everybody else. Go and do something. Help out. You know, we just can't complain and say what we don't like. We got to get in the game and do something as well. Good night.
Absolutely. Great, great, Chris. Great. All right. So I'm going to go to Michelle. I'm going to turn it over to her. But she has some news about upcoming events. It's going to be exciting. One thing is, next week we will not be doing a Friday Live. There will be no show next week. Michelle will address that. So let me turn it over to Michelle Serena McCombs. Michelle?
Okay. Thank you, Walter. And thank you to our live audience for joining us. Thank you to our special guests, Walter Fields and Ronald Fisher of the Law Office of Walter Fields, Attorney at Law. Panel members Christopher and Gene, we thank you both for joining us. Next week live, we will not have a live. It's the holiday coming up, but on December 3rd, we have Ray McGuire joining us. So please join us on December 3rd at our Friday Live at 6 p.m. We hope you all enjoyed this live broadcast from New York City. This broadcast will be rebroadcast on Sunday at 3 p.m. on all streaming platforms. Please follow us at thewaltweekly.com, IG and Facebook, Twitter, on the Podbeam, The Walt Weekly, iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, wherever you stream and listen to your streaming platforms. Have an awesome holiday. Everyone be safe. And thank you all for listening and tuning in.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. Have a good weekend, everybody.
Blessings. Good night. Thank you.